Welcome to Unity of Fairfax, a positive path for spiritual living and spiritual center for education, practice, and service in Northern Virginia. We hope you find inspiration in this week's message.
Thank you, Ron, and thank you, Amy, for that time out, that period of respite and relaxation and renewal. Well, my many 3-week sabbatical has come and gone like that, as these sort of experiences will do. But I want to give huge kudos and thanks to the entire Unity of Fairfax community, especially our staff and guest speakers, for keeping everything running smoothly in my absence. Oh my gosh, and if you missed any of the last 3 Sunday services, please go to the live stream and watch. On August 23rd, Ron presented a very powerful mystery message, based on the life and the teachings of Unity co-founder Charles Fillmore. On August 30th, James Jones presented a phenomenal exploration of wisdom and clarity and what all that can mean. And last weekend, Reverend Sherry Quander offered a wonderful message on Kobayashi Maru, the no-win situation and how to take charge of those. Gosh, when I got back, I was truly inspired and renewed by all 3 speakers. And wow, we are so blessed here at Unity of Fairfax. And the building was still standing, which was really nice for me to see. So I sometimes worry about things like that, and it looks great. So kudos to staff again for all you do to keep this vibrant community thriving. There is a story in the scriptures, in the Christian scriptures, very well known. It's Jesus feeding the 5,000, and what a wonderful experience that was. But Ron referenced something in the meditation that is very important for us to consider if a miracle is to happen or something fantastic is to take place. And it was this calling to go apart for a while, to rest and renew, because something significant was about to happen, and something significant can't really happen if our tanks are on empty. Let's look at our passage from Mark chapter 6. The apostles gathered around Jesus and told him all they had done and taught. He said to them, "Come apart to a deserted place all by yourselves and rest for a while." For many were coming and going, and they had no leisure even to eat. And they went away in a boat to a deserted place by themselves. They took a time out. Timeouts are really important, not just in puppy school, not just when we're disciplining children, but in pro sports as well. Because coaches will call for a timeout in order to regroup. A timeout is a halt in the play called specifically and deliberately for a reason at a very important time. A timeout in a game allows the coach of either team to communicate with the team. That might be to craft a new strategy because the situation has changed, or it might be called to boost morale in a challenging Kobayashi Maru situation, or it might be called to pretty much put a stop to the game clock. Because teams always call a timeout at strategic points. A Sabbath. A sabbatical is a strategic point. In the Ten Commandments, we're told to honor the Sabbath, take a time out, rest and renew. We can't keep going, 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 going all the time and still be productive. There must be rest in our busyness. Interestingly enough, the root word for Sabbath and sabbatical is the same. And it is imperative for our health on every level, our spiritual, mental, physical, emotional health, that we take a time out. And in these times, in this 2020 year, it's even more important than necessary. Because in spite of all the facts of the world, we still have important work to do. Our work of transformation of consciousness has never slowed down. The times are calling us and reminding us how important it actually is. And more than that, reminding us we have everything we need to do this work, to make this miracle happen. In the story of feeding of the 5,000, I just want to share a few more verses. It goes on like this. Many saw them going and recognizing them, and they hurried on foot from all the small towns ahead of them. As he went ashore, he saw a great crowd, and he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And he being Jesus, began to teach them many things. When it grew late, his disciples came to him and said, "This is a deserted place, and the hour is now very late. Send them away so they may go into the surrounding country and villages and buy something for themselves to eat." But he said to them, "You give them something to eat." And they said to him, "Are we to go and buy 200 denarii worth of food and bread and bring it here?" And he said to them, "How many loaves do you have? Go and how many fish?" And they learned that they had 5 loaves and 2 fish. Then he ordered them to get all the people to sit down in groups on the grass. And so they all sat down in groups of hundreds and fifties. I'm not sure they were social distancing, but it really wasn't an issue back then. Taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, he looked up to heaven and blessed and broke the loaves and gave them to his disciples to set before the people to eat. And he divided the 2 fish among them, and all ate and were filled. And they took up 12 baskets of broken pieces and the fish. Those who had eaten the loaves and fishes numbered 5,000 men besides women and children. Now, this is really an incredible story, and scholars have offered a variety of different explanations for it. Well, one story is, and one explanation, it's just pure propaganda for the Jesus movement. Didn't happen, makes a nice story. We might call it fake news today. Second explanation is, it was a genuine miracle that happened. You know, tandem, that functions kind of like magic. It happened. God said it, and I believe it. That settles it. And the third, the one which I align with mostly, is that this is evidence, as Shakespeare said in Macbeth, of the milk of human kindness. You see, here's the deal. Back in the day, travelers couldn't necessarily stop at a roadside stand and pick up food and keep going like we do today. They had to carry their food with them, stashed in their cloaks and in their bags. Perhaps, through the power of the teaching, they heard a message of taking care of one another, loving one another, sharing one another, thinking of the common good more than my personal food supply. I'm just going to take care of me. It's like, no, Jesus said, in the kingdom, there is enough for everyone. You feed them, speaking to his disciples, but ultimately he was talking to the rest of them. Feed one another. Be kind. Be loving. During my mini sabbatical, I stopped at a lot of roadside places, 7-Eleven, because I could, because I was on the road a lot, visiting family in North Carolina, visiting family in Indiana. But I did something else that really fed my soul, which is why clergy take sabbaticals. Because we have to feed our souls. We have to renew in our calling to serve. I did 3 distinctly important soul-feeding activities aside from visiting family, which also fed my soul. I read the book White Fragility by Robin DiAngelo, a book that explains why it's so hard for white people to talk about racism. I read the book The Fire Next Time by James Baldwin, a black author who wrote this work in the 60s that basically laid out everything Robin DiAngelo wrote about in 2018. And I participated in the observance of the 57th anniversary of the 1963 March on Washington, which interestingly enough was also the 65th anniversary to the day when 14-year-old Emmett Till was killed, a young black man, lynched for supposedly making passes at a white woman that were later refuted. These things fed my soul. This entire period of time fed my soul, taking a time out from my day-to-day activities to focus on other things. In her book, White Fragility, Robin DiAngelo, the author, makes some important points in the context of addressing racism that have broader application, points that in some way challenge teachings commonly taught and found and held in New Thought. And it is important for us to be willing to have our beliefs and our assumptions challenged, because we must always remain teachable if we are to do the great work of transforming consciousness. Because as soon as any one of us thinks we know it all, we got it all, it's the beginning of the end. So one of the points she talks about in this book is the idea of don't judge. How many times have we come to a gathering? Oh, we teach non-judgment. I don't judge. You know, we reference the scripture, judge not lest ye be judged. I mean, that's a reminder that there is a consequence to our thinking. But what she says in the text is refraining from judgment is not humanly possible. So this guideline cannot be achieved or enforced and is functionally meaningless. And I thought, what? What? What are you talking about? I was getting mad at her for getting mad at me. But there's that reminder that all of us are selectively blind to our own biases and prejudices. This is why the work of self-awareness is so important. And especially in these day and times, think about, well, I mentioned parents and grandparents. How many times do we look at our parents and grandparents and think, well, they did this right, they did that wrong. They did this right, they did that wrong. Or were they good people or bad people? Or think about the political climate today. This one's a good one. This one's the bad one. This one's a good one. If you support this one, you're a bad one. If you support this one, you're a good one. So this passing of judgment is tricky. But what we are called to do is to learn to evaluate and discern. See, evaluation and discernment allow for complexity and multi-layered interpretations that keep us out of the extremist thinking of either or, good or bad. Because if any one of us has done a searching and for its fearless moral inventory, you'll realize we are all an admixture of challenging and helpful traits. Nobody's completely bad, nobody's completely good. So we want to stay out of that sort of extremist thinking. Let's just be aware that we do it is what she's wanting us to do. It so often gets in the way of the transformation of consciousness. Another point she says in there is don't make assumptions. Oh my goodness gracious, I have taught this one up to one side and down the other till I'm blue in the face. Robin DiAngelo says, the nature of an assumption is that you don't know that you're making it. So this guideline cannot be achieved or enforced and is functionally meaningless. What she wants us to be aware of is that as human beings, we do make assumptions. Not a bad thing. We all do it. The important point is that we be open and willing to learn when we have made an assumption and be open and willing to receive the feedback when somebody presents to us, you have made an assumption and it is not accurate. So we want to be able to acknowledge that assumption making is happening all the time. And affirm that when they are revealed to us, we have the strength of character to accept, you're right. I did make that assumption. I am willing to be self-aware. Another point she makes in the material that I found was very helpful, because this is one I have based a lot of energy into, is assume good intentions or assume positive intent. This really yanked my chain, I'll be real candid, when I read these words. By emphasizing intentions over impact, this guideline privileges the aggressor over the impact of their behavior on the target. In so doing, the aggressor's intentions become more important than the issue. In essence, this guideline tells victims that so long as there was no intention to cause harm, they need to let go of the hurt and move on. Holy mackerel. There's everything right in engaging in the forgiveness process. All of us have been the recipients of behaviors that necessitate the forgiveness process. But the work of the forgiveness falls always on the victim. However, if we want to move beyond forgiveness to reconciliation, to having relationship again and having a solid, healthy relationship, then the offender must acknowledge the impact of his or her actions, assume responsibility for those impacts, regardless of the intent, and take meaningful action to restore the relationship. Holy Toledo, Batman. Because if we don't, why is this necessary? Because there's a consequence. And that consequence is that the road to hell is paved with good intentions. In other words, the teachable moment is lost if the offender doesn't have or isn't willing to have a change of heart or change of consciousness. We just kick the problem down the road and repeat it again and again and again, and the victim has to forgive again and again and again. Nothing changes. We must call out when we have been harmed, regardless of the intention. And if the offender will say, "I accept, I'm willing to learn," hallelujah, we got something. We're going places. But the more there is the defensiveness, the longer we produce the problem in the first place. Whoa, well, that's heavy. Welcome back from sabbatical, Reverend Russell. Maybe next time you'll go to a spa. I say these things because our spiritual growth and development isn't necessarily easy. It is always worth it, though. And I've spent a lot of time these past few weeks doing some self-reflection. Ways in which I've done well in my world and in my life, and ways in which, room for improvement. I need to be willing to be uncomfortable to grow. We all do. And the great thing is, there is a power and a presence within us, the Christ within, that guides us and moves us along so that we can be that love and expression that the daily word called for. And sometimes that love is graceful, like being held tightly in your grandmother's arms. And sometimes that love is pretty darn tough, but it's still love. And what the world needs now is truly more love in the world. Yes. And we're called always to honor our own experiences. You know, there's this expression, we must speak our truth. That's a word that's kind of awkward sometimes. I just think it's imperative that when any one of us has an experience, that we be willing to listen to what somebody else's experience is. We don't have to agree with it. But if that was their experience, their lived experience, we are called upon to acknowledge it, just as we, each one of us, has the responsibility to speak what our experience has been. That's often hard. But we can do it. The great Swiss psychiatrist Carl Jung used to say about his analysts who would come to him with dreams and for counseling, he said, "I don't know whether this actually happened or not, but it was their experience. And that's what I have to work with." So I'd like to close by offering four affirmations that will help seal some of these points for us. Affirmations or prayers. I'm going to read each one of them two times. I invite you to join me as well. Spirit within, reveal to me when it is I am engaging in this judgmental behavior, and open my mind and my heart to comprehend and appreciate the complexities of life. Spirit within, reveal to me when it is I am engaging in judgmental behavior, and open my mind and heart to comprehend and appreciate complexities of life. Spirit within, awaken me to the assumptions I am making that block me from experiencing the fullness of life. and show me how to release them with grace and ease. Spirit within, awaken me to the assumptions I am making that block me from experiencing the fullness of life, and show me how to release them with grace and ease. Spirit within, empower me to take responsibility for my actions that may have harmed or offended myself or others, so that I may make peace where there was a front. Spirit within, empower me to take responsibility for my actions that may have harmed or offended myself or others, so that I may make peace where there was a front. Spirit within, guide me to validate, to acknowledge the validity of everyone's experiences, including my own, so that we might love and serve one another freely. Spirit within, guide me to acknowledge the validity of everyone's experiences, including my own, so that we might love and serve one another freely. We have a great task before us in transforming our own individual consciousness from the purely human to the Christ level. And it's a great work of transforming our collective consciousness to one from us and them to it's just us. I affirm that these simple and powerful affirmations may help us all do that work, so that, as the scripture said, all will eat and be filled. Peace be with you, and namaste.
Thank you for tuning into Unity of Fairfax podcast. You're welcome to join us live in Oakton, Virginia, every Sunday at 9 and 11 a.m., or view our live stream services from our website at unityoffairfax.org. We appreciate your donations to support this podcast to make our message of positive, practical spirituality more accessible to all. See you next time.